Today on Doomed! The final debate of 2019 between the Democrats who are, well, I guess, left in this race. Well, not completely accurate. There's a few who didn't make the stage. But all of the front runners made their way to the debate stage tonight for the, you know, the last hurrah of 2019. And we will break it all down for you tonight, right now, on Doomed. Let's get right to it because it's late. And I don't have any more of an intro prepared because it's a debate show. And you can hear him now. Here we go, folks. My guest for tonight. I'm so happy he's joining us. Let me pull him up on the screen. Benjamin Dixon of the... What's the name of your show again, Ben?
The Benjamin Dixon Show.
The Benjamin Dixon Show. That's right. That's right. Yeah, I was hoping you'd get that, and it wasn't going to be like, this guy really stole the name of my show.
No. You know, you're literally the first person I think that has done that joke, but it actually, it's late at night, so it was funny as hell to me, so.
I'm actually shocked I'm the first person to do that. I thought it was going to be just another cornball Matt Binder attempt.
to be honest, because I'm creative in a lot of ways, but when it comes to naming a show or naming a company or something, I'm the worst. So I took 3 months trying to figure out a name. I was like, F it, just go with my name. So that's my struggle.
Listen, it's probably the smart move. Maybe I should have went with the Matt Binder show here. You know, I named it Doomed because originally this show was just covering, you know, the far right and all the horrible shit going on with them. But, you know, then the 2020 race ramped up and got the Democratic debates. I mean, I guess looking at these debates, there's plenty of reasons to feel like we're all doomed. But
true story.
But let's jump right into this because I really want to get your feelings on tonight's debate, because I think this one, out of all the debates so far, this one was probably the hardest to pin down, because there all the other debates, I feel like it was either a clear case of just like the debate format and the moderators just not working, or there was a clear, you know, person who came out looking really bad, and maybe a few people who came out looking good, but there was always like a clear loser. But in this debate, I feel like, you know, the moderators, they had their moments of overall crappiness, I guess you could say. But overall, it was probably the most substantive debate. And everyone, I feel like, minus maybe Tom Steyer and maybe Buttigieg, depending on your feelings on him, came out looking good, or at least on the same level. So what are your feelings about this?
You know, that's what made the debate so difficult, not in the sense of difficult to watch, but difficult because, you know, Joe Biden didn't look as bad as he needs to look, right? Joe Biden kind of, you know, maybe the bar is set so low for him that he can slide by, and maybe we just have low expectations set for him. So if he doesn't go up there and make a complete moron of himself, then he gets graded on a curve. But that's problematic when he would be the one going up against Donald Trump. I mean, if you can't say anything else about Donald Trump, he knows how to completely rattle, completely dismantle a debate stage, not in the sense of he's a good debater. He just breaks and violates every norm, every expectation. He just does whatever the hell he wants to do. And Joe Biden is the last person who needs to be up there, mainly because Joe just doesn't have he doesn't have the wherewithal to handle Donald Trump. So the fact that the debate stage was pretty flat tonight, nobody stood out. Nobody had an entirely miserable night. I did enjoy the dunking on Pete Buttigieg. He earned it, and everybody took turns. Everybody took turns. I mean, and even Amy Klobuchar, she came back and dunked again on him. And I'm like, it's like, he's dead. Leave him alone. You know the meme? He's already dead.
Right. I tweeted in that moment that I was like, I can't believe I'm about to say this, but go Amy Klobuchar.
Yeah. Yeah. Like she's got some real twisted stuff going on with her. Like, her sense of humor is the worst, and she's like extremely mean to her staffers. But in that moment, I was like, I'm really glad it's you. I'm glad it's you because, you know, if anybody would ruthlessly gut Pete Buttigieg, it would be Amy Klobuchar. So, yeah, go Amy in that moment. Now, but no further, though.
Right. Now, here's something I want to we'll get back to that moment, everyone dunking on Pete, because it was really one of the best moments. But you bring up something that's really interesting to me that I want to talk about that's sort of been a theme throughout this debate season so far. And it's something that I've never really seen in previous primary races before. And it's this new, I don't know if it's just like, I guess they feel like this is how the Dem base feels, so that's why they're doing this. But there is a real motivation from everyone on that stage to sort of not go on the attack too hard. It's like they're afraid they're going to, because I guess they've seen what happens to people who did go on the attack. You know, Kamala went after Biden early on in those debates, and she tanked after that. Castro had that moment where he was sort of mean for calling out Biden for sort of being out of it when he talks. And, you know, that sort of made him tank too. It's really bizarre that people are just not going at each other for some substantive reasons too. I'm not talking about just like yelling at each other for the hell of it. I mean, they're afraid to criticize each other's policies.
So you know what, and not to go too off on a tangent about this, but I think part of it is the fact that there's not a lot of sincerity on that stage. And when you anger is an art form, right? You know that now doing your show, you've been doing your show for a while, and you know that, you know, you have genuine anger, but you also have to know how to control that anger and how to deliver that anger and how to make it just enough so that it's palatable. But the core of that anger has to be sincerity. There's a lot of phoniness on that stage, man. And so when I don't think any of them have capacity, maybe one or two, Bernie being one of them, has the capacity to convey that anger in a way that is received versus as contrived. That's what I think. So I don't think they have the skill set nor the sincerity to actually be angry. The problem is we need angry, right? People are upset. Donald Trump is going to be angry. Everybody's space is angry. And you have to be able to go toe-to-toe with Donald Trump. This is not a season for kumbaya whatsoever.
Right, absolutely. And you know, but even Bernie, again, not to harp on this too much, but even Bernie, even when he goes after Biden for legitimate things Biden voted for or policies he supported, he always feels like he needs to point out that, you know, and I'm friends with Joe Biden, and Joe Biden's my friend. It's like, it's like, listen, man. Like, you don't have to do that. You don't have to do that.
Nah, just gut the dude. Like, gut him and leave him out there. Like, you got to get these people out the paint. Like, for instance, Pete Buttigieg, he's a dangerous candidate, in my opinion. Not because I think he's going to win, but because of his real laser-like focus on closing the Overton window. After all the years of work, the crazy left Twitter we've been doing, expanding the Overton window, he's insisting on the most progressive idea is to be moderate. Right. That's his entire positioning. Right. And so for me, him being the dangerous person that he is, somebody needs to go through with a haymaker, politically speaking, and just finish him and get him off the stage. And with people holding back, except for Amy Klobuchar, because, you know, she's got that hate running through her blood. But besides her, everyone holding back and trying to be nice and be polite, that's not going to get somebody out of this. This is a fight. This is an MMA fight. You got to break some jaws, politically speaking. And you can't do that when you're always trying to, you know, suggest, oh, yeah, they're my friends and my colleagues. Nah, you ain't my colleague. You're my rival and you're wrong. Get the hell off the stage.
Absolutely. And, you know, like you brought up, Buttigieg is the real danger. You know, Biden, this is the last time we're ever going to deal with Biden. After this race, Biden's gone. You know, it's it. That's it. We got to beat him now, but that's it. You know, Biden will be gone. Buttigieg, if this guy takes off somehow, even if he doesn't win, if he just develops some sort of base within the party, we'll be dealing with this guy for the next 40 years.
For the rest of my life. Like, I don't know how young you are. You're probably, what, 20, in your 20s. So definitely for the rest of my life, you know, maybe we get some good health care and I could live a little bit longer. But that's the problem. Like, Buttigieg represents a base in the Democratic Party that wants to be socially liberal. And when they say social conservatives, economic conservatives, it's catering to the status quo, right? And he is bringing a brand new breath of fresh air. He's Clinton all over again, not Hillary. He's Bill Clinton all over again. In fact, he's actually worse than that. He's Reagan all over again, just with a couple of, you know, socially liberal policies. And the fact that he's so young, the thing about, here's what's great about it. Everybody else in his age group are lower. I mean, the vast majority of us, like, we've had a hard go at this thing. Like, we've been fighting and struggling, scratching and surviving for a long time. So he doesn't represent this generation. The thing is, though, we have to make sure that the people and the sentiment and the politics of this generation, that we get in power, that we get into the influential positions, because he could be an outlier for our generation and still have an outsized impact. Because of exactly what you said, he's in the party, he has a base, he has a platform, and he can really screw us up for a very long time.
Right, definitely. And just to note, I really appreciate you thinking I'm in my 20s. I'm not that much older, but I'm 33.
Okay.
But
yeah, you're still a young man. You're still a young man.
But no, that's a perfect point. And it's something that really is funny to me because, you know, the folks that do like Buttigieg, these older, wealthier white people who really are big fans of his, they constantly sort of bring up that, you know, it's time to give the next generation a shot. That's one of their reasons for liking Buttigieg, because of how young he is. And yeah. I mean, if you want to give the next generation a shot, you give the majority of the next generation the shot, right, by going with the candidate they support, because there's a reason they support him. But that just sort of flies right over their head. I mean, I guess they don't really... You know, giving the next generation the chance isn't about giving one guy from the next generation a chance.
Right. No, but that's intentional, right? Like, that's intentional obtuseness. They have a vested interest in making sure that the person that they pick from our generation is going to protect their dividends, is going to protect their 401ks. And especially when they're probably, I have to really find some data on how much of the Democratic donor base, we'll probably never get the exact numbers, but how much of their money is coming from healthcare. Because the number one thing that Pete Buttigieg has picked on to attack is to push us away from Medicare for All. So my thinking is that the Democratic donor base probably has a tremendous amount of wealth tied up in the healthcare industry.
Right. And let's go to that, actually, because, you know, I wasn't going to bring it up so yet because it's not, you know, but it was a major moment in the debate. So let's get to it. The most passionate I've seen Biden this year was that moment tonight when he decided he was going to attack Bernie Sanders on Medicare for All. I've never seen him so fiery. I've never seen him so, you know, so he told Bernie Sanders to put his hand down. He was like full-blown on the attack. And it's just, you know, he was basically yelling, better things aren't possible, damn it. Like, it was like, that's what makes you, like, it's one thing to go up there, I disagree with you completely, but it's one thing to go up there and be that moderate who goes, listen, it's be a wonderful thing to do this for everybody, but this, and this are why I think it's not possible. Again, completely disagree, wrong-headed, dangerous as well. But to go up there with such passion and fight against that is just like, buddy, who are you fighting for? Like, why are you so angry about this?
You know, but here's the thing about, and this is probably going to be a thing that I'm wrong on. So I want to preface it by saying I think I'm wrong, but I have to consider it. I think the passion that I saw there was sincere, and I think he's sincerely wrong. I think Pete Buttigieg is calculating and intentionally wrong, and he knows what he's telling us is a lie. I feel like Joe Biden really believes that it's impossible to do this, and he's super passionate about that. He's dead wrong regardless. But if you ask me between Pete Buttigieg and Joe Biden, I probably would jump out the window. But if I had to pick, it would be Joe Biden, because I feel like there's a level of sincerity there that Pete Buttigieg is the exact opposite. I think Buttigieg is calculating. I think he's cold with his calculations. I think he's opportunistic. I think he will say whatever needs to be said in the moment, which is why he got caught up on that question on the Afghanistan war. He tried to give Barbara Lee her credit as well as say, but we had to go. That's because he's so used to saying whatever needs to be said in the moment. And that's the very worst type of politician. So in terms of Joe Biden, I think he was sincere, but just sincerely wrong.
Right, right. And I just got to say, you are the king of the segues here, because you just perfectly brought up the Barbara Lee thing, which was next I wanted to talk about. You know,
I've been doing this for a little while. You know, I'm joking.
You know, and I completely agree with you that if I had to pick between Biden and Buttigieg, easily Biden. Again, yeah, we'll be dealing with him for a lot less time.
Yeah.
And you know, but although there is one positive to maybe Buttigieg over Biden, and that is we need to just get a few leftists to somehow make a ton of money over the next year, and then he might be able to be swayed. You know, he might.
Yeah. Hey, maybe we should talk to Chapo and tell him to send him a couple donations or something.
Chapo, we just need you to somehow convince Silicon Valley investors to invest in your podcast, because exactly. I'm sure they didn't even. I'm sure we know how much they make. That ain't even enough to satiate Buttigieg. I'll tell you.
Exactly. But they do it, you know, in terms of that's the struggle over here on the left, man. That's the struggle, but that's a whole different show, man. The struggle of media and money. But go ahead, you were saying with the other thing. Right. Now I've lost my place.
No, it's all good. So the Barbara Lee Afghanistan vote was really something stunning to behold, because on one hand, and this is one of those things where unfortunately this would be like a major thing people picked up on to understand just how different the candidates are. But because of what it's on, it's something that's, you know, it involves the Afghanistan war, which already a number of people in this country just don't give a shit about, unfortunately.
Right.
It involves someone having the moral clarity to see where things were going and to stand up and be not even just one of the few, the one to vote against it. Again, something people don't care about. They would call this purity politics if it was if Barbara Lee was running for president.
Right.
She voted against the Afghanistan war. And now, that was a very hard vote at that time. I mean, you could find people, again, not many, but you could find a few people who voted against the Iraq war.
Right.
Not many, her, to vote against the Afghanistan war. And now, Buttigieg gives Barbara Lee props tonight for that vote, but then goes ahead and says, but we had to go there anyway. Which is really something. If you just this, everyone needs to just stop for a second and really just take this in. They need to just stop and take in the fact that this guy just gave Barbara Lee props for having the clarity to make that very hard vote. And then he essentially says, but I believe she was wrong. And then on the other side.
Exactly.
But then on the other side, you have Bernie Sanders, who I have never seen this happen on the debate stage before. Maybe it has happened before, but it's a very rare thing. The guy says, this was a gotcha thing, too, because it started with Bernie coming out, bringing up Biden's vote for the Iraq war and Bernie's vote against it. And the moderators, it's a good follow-up. But again, it's not really the same thing for the reasons I just mentioned. The moderator brings up how, but Bernie voted for the Afghanistan war.
Right.
And Bernie brings up how Barbara Lee was the only person to vote against the Afghanistan war and how she got it right and he got it wrong. Now, how many times just this year have other candidates and other moderators went after another candidate, you know, Biden, for example, to get them to basically admit that they were wrong at something, and they just refuse to admit it? And then Bernie Sanders just unprompted, you know, just says, Barbara Lee was right and I was wrong on this issue.
Yeah.
I mean, it's something you see usually. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say that was a rare occasion. That was a magnanimous moment. And I'm not saying that because, you know, Bernie is one of my favorites up there. It's because you just never really see it. And there's power in the question at the end of the show, because it was a show. The question at the end of the debate was ridiculous. Like, what would you ask forgiveness for? But there's something when you actually just display that, like when you unprompted display. Yeah, I got something wrong, guys. And so I have no problem admitting that. The thing is that we don't value that. The politicians don't value that. Not a single, unless, watch this. This is what you're going to find happening, Matt. If that polls well, if the news media is talking about that, then the next debate, every motherfucker's going up there, going to be up there apologizing for some shit, man. So that's the stuff that I hate. But at least Bernie was able to demonstrate the power of that. And I love the way you juxtapose that right next to Buttigieg, who tried to get the best of both worlds, where he'll say, yeah, she was right, but also I was right, so nobody was right. Nah, it doesn't work like that.
Your point about the forgiveness question and coming in the same debate is such a good point to make, because like you put it, you know, you have a question that basically forces someone to say something like that. And, right. You know, it was pointed out, and it's something to, you know, something to be aware of, is that in that question, they had a choice of asking for forgiveness or giving someone a gift. And it was only Warren and Klobuchar who asked for forgiveness, the two women on stage.
Women, yeah.
And the guys were the ones who bestowed a gift. And, you know, I thought Bernie's framing of it was really good in terms of how, you know, the gift is everyone basically on the stage, you know, basically having the ability to beat Trump. But yeah, it's really something to see the fact that, you know, there's a forgiveness question and then there's just the act of asking for, you know, coming out and saying you were wrong. And it's how it's just going to go. Besides this show and what you and me talking about this right now, I guarantee you, it doesn't matter how it's going to, there's not going to be a poll to see if it polls well. And there's not going to be that fictional scenario of everyone coming out and apologizing, because no one beyond us right now is going to talk about it. Like not going to be a mainstream question.
You know, exactly that, man, because it's not salacious, right? It's not going to drive the clicks. Everyone is going to talk about the moments that people yelled at each other. And to be quite frank with you, man, like there was a certain point, I think it was the exchange between Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders, that I just started to tune out, because and don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to appeal towards civility, because like F civility, because we have a fight on our hands. But at a certain level of time of night when everyone is just yelling, the media wants that so that they can have the sound bites. But for the rest of us, it's like it's overkill. And so that's the problem, right? The audience, I think the consumer really can handle a higher level of discourse. It's that what drives the media is the salaciousness. And that's exactly why they won't talk about that moment. I agree with you. Nobody else is going to talk about that in a meaningful way.
Now let's we talked about the everyone basically beating up on Buttigieg, rightly so. there was just an extra moment in there though I want to discuss, because I think it was it's going to be an interesting dynamic. It really showed you just who the candidates think is their biggest competition. And there was a moment in that whole everyone jumping on Buttigieg that started off the whole thing basically. And it was Warren and Pete going at each other for Pete's wine cave fundraiser.
Right, right.
And Warren, you know, Warren, in my view, and again, this is my politics and where I come from it, Warren easily won that exchange. But at the same time, you know, there's going to be a subset of people who thought that Mayor Pete's point that he's the only non-millionaire on stage, so how dare she say that to him when she's got the millions of dollars or whatever. It's a bizarre sort of attack line, but at the same time, when you look at the polling and you see people's second choices, it's weird to see Buttigieg so high on the list of some Warren supporters' second choice. And I think that's sort of where that battle was going. And I've seen actually that the reason Warren is sort of falling is because her supporters who were swayed by Buttigieg jumped on Pete, and that's where the Pete surge came from too. So
interesting.
Yeah, I'm not sure how much could be attributed to that, but it's certainly they certainly think that, because the two of them were at each other's throat during that exchange.
And, you know, I think the way I interpreted it from almost the very first debate, I saw there was a level of animosity that Pete Buttigieg has towards Elizabeth Warren that he doesn't demonstrate anywhere else. He doesn't target anyone else with that level of antipathy. And I wonder how much of it is rooted in the data, like you just outlined, because without question, Pete Buttigieg would most certainly get up there and just strategically do what he does. But it still just comes off so petty to me. It comes off like he has a personal vendetta against her. Like maybe she was a professor of his.
Ben, you froze up here. One second. I'll call you back. Let's see. We'll fix that. No problem. All right. Boom. We are back, I believe. You there?
Yep, I'm here.
All right, cool. So you left off where we cut off where we were talking about Buttigieg having someone like Warren as a professor.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a level of bitterness towards Warren. Like, he gives her these evil stares. I wish I had the time to like go back through all the debates and just capture those moments where he stares at her like he hates her guts. And, you know, there's something there, man. I don't know, because he's not pointing it. He's not targeting it anywhere else. I think you're absolutely right in terms of the data. It is weird to see that overlap. I really want to ask those supporters of Warren that left her and went to Pete, like, what the hell do you stand for anyway? Like, what is it that you saw? Because there's a divide, right? I think Warren obviously is not as far to the left as I would want her to be on Medicare for All. One of the reasons I am not supporting her as openly as I would have is because she backed away from it. But there's a clear divide between people who are willing. There's two people on that stage who's willing to try something bigger and better. That's Warren and most certainly Bernie Sanders. Everybody else is literally making the case for keeping everything the same or giving you $1,000 a month. Other than that, everyone wants to keep everything the same. And so my question to those supporters are, like, what is it that you see in Buttigieg that will make you go from Warren to Buttigieg? On top of the fact that he's giving your candidate like the evil eye on a level that says that there's some deep seated hatred there. So I may never get that answer, but I do really want to beg the question.
Right. No, I think that's a great point. And I think it also shows the dynamic of basically these primaries. We all just assume that, you know, because I guess, you know, it sort of is the case with Bernie Sanders. Where, you know, if you come out as a Bernie Sanders, if you say, you know, you're a Bernie Sanders supporter, I believe it's something like 75% of his supporters say they are sticking with him and they're not looking at any other candidate. Whereas I think every other candidate is like, I think Biden maybe has like something like 50s or high 40s, and everyone else is like in the 20s and 30s percentile. It's like, yeah. You know, I guess it's foreign to us in terms of being able to just jump from candidate to candidate like that, but I guess the Democratic base just doesn't really look at the candidates that way. I mean, it bears out the fact that policy isn't always first to some people. Some people just look at who can beat Trump, really.
Yeah, and that's the thing, right? Under no circumstances is it reasonable to think Pete Buttigieg can beat Trump, right? Even more so, Joe Biden. Now, I did say I would pick Joe Biden over Pete Buttigieg, but I think Joe Biden has the least chance on that stage of beating Donald Trump. I think Amy Klobuchar has a better chance because it really will come down to those really small moments in the debate. And people will change their mind, obviously, like you just discussed, at the drop of a dime based on how they perform in the debate. And Joe Biden, notwithstanding, he did an okay job tonight. He didn't completely collapse, right? But he's not going to do well with Donald Trump. So it's like this argument of electability. How the hell are you still thinking that Joe Biden is going to beat Donald Trump when he can barely survive this stage where everyone is trying to be nice to him?
Right. Now, let's talk about, and to me, this put a damper on the debate for me, because I feel like the moderators tonight did a much better job than some of the other debates. But this was just like, it was just like to get a snipe in, to look like you were, you had a witty comeback or something. It's the moment where the question is posed about, basically it's framed in a way where they pointed out that Kamala Harris and Cory Booker, two candidates of color, were no longer on the debate stage, and only Andrew Yang, out of all seven of those candidates on stage, was a person of color. And they gave the question to Yang, and he took it well. He said how, you know, he thinks he misses Kamala and Corey, but he thinks Corey will be up there again. And he pointed out the problems that you know, that candidates of color face. And then the question was brought to Bernie. Now, I'll grant that Bernie Sanders probably could have worded it in a different way. But at the same time, it was thrown at him so quickly that there was no way he could add the addendum as to why he was bringing it up. So basically, he's asked a question about race, and he brings up how he'd like to go back to the climate change issue.
Right.
And
right.
And I mean, from how well he was prepared he was to bring the details up, I'm assuming he was planning on bringing up how climate change, because climate change was the question right before this one, how climate change affects people of color disproportionately. But before he could even get to whatever his next point was going to be, the moderator jumps in and says,
slam dunked on his head, man. Like,
yeah. And just says, like, excuse me, we're talking about race here.
With all due respect, yeah.
Yeah, so, and it's like, the crowd roared at that, which really, like, come on, like, my God. And, you know, it's just like, to go at it like that, I didn't see any other moment even approach that level tonight. It's just like there was something there to it. It was just bizarre.
Oh, no, there most certainly was something there to it. And this is probably where I'm going to lose the audience. But listen, after 2016... I needed Bernie Sanders to be flawless on all questions of race. To that end, I felt like, no, Bernie, don't pivot because you're going to open the, oh, here it comes, slam dunked on his head,
right?
And my policy is to never give people the ammunition they need to shoot you in the face.
Right.
Bernie Sanders in that moment, and I saw how he tried to pivot back, but you know what? This is politics. This is a debate stage. You don't get a chance to pivot back. You don't get a chance to be nuanced, not after you gave the moderator the chance to alley-oop, LeBron James slam dunk on his head. And that's exactly what everyone who wants to get Bernie Sanders out of the paint, that's the moment they've been waiting for forever. Now, I haven't seen the news tonight. I saw a few minutes on PBS. They didn't recap that moment. But I guarantee you MSNBC – it's going to run that moment at least tomorrow and on Saturday and definitely on Sunday. And so to my suggestion to the Sanders team is, Bernie, don't just nail it. Nail it, because they're going to take every opportunity that you give them to make a mountain out of a molehill. But then also, man, just answer the goddamn question. Get it right. Let's move on. So I was irritated with that. I was irritated mostly because Bernie gave them the opportunity to do that to him. So,
right.
I mean, I'm sure people are going to disagree with me, but that's just how I feel.
No, so. I completely agree with you. And if at the very least, people need to understand that there should have been a strategic reason to not, even if that was what he was planning to do. The wording of it gave them the opportunity to so he needed to be better on that point. Absolutely. And, the interesting thing to me, though, is, and this is a slight tangent, but it's something I've noticed again this year, is that he's the only one who I see get hit for being sort of a single issue candidate. Anyone else who is a single issue candidate is sort of like given props for being a single issue candidate. Like, I brought this up last time because a similar thing came up. But what's his name? His name, he dropped out early. He was the climate change candidate, the climate change guy.
I forget. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, him.
Everyone was, he's the climate change guy. Props to him for being the only guy up there who only talks about climate change. I saw some of the very people who would have hit Bernie Sanders for being known as the climate change guy for calling him like, he's the hot climate change dad or something like that. And it's like, give me a break. If Bernie Sanders was doing his one hits, you'd be like, what about this? What about this? What about that? And it's like, it's just bizarre. It's just a bizarre thing that they always find a reason for him to
well,
and but he needs to be able to come back from that, though, for sure.
I have one last critique of Sanders here, right along the lines of what you said. So here's let me start with a criticism of Andrew Yang, right? So Andrew Yang really is a one-hit wonder. All he has is this freedom dividend. Everything else seems to be, he ran away from Medicare for All. His answer to every question is the freedom dividend. Bernie, to me, I'm a single-issue voter. It's Medicare for All, so I like to hear it anytime he wants to talk about it. But in the answer to the question on trans rights and trans lives, it really didn't connect the dots to the question that was a critical question. And in that case, to me, it sounded like a one hit wonder, like the record was on repeat. So to me, it's like, don't wear it. I need you to have meaningful answers to the most sensitive questions that are asked, because that's what the people are looking for. That's how they connect with you emotionally. And so if all you do is pivot back to, like Andrew Yang does, $1,000 freedom dividend is the answer to everything, including our problem with Russia, then that gives them some more ammunition. But more so than the ammunition is that people aren't connecting with you emotionally, because the question was about the lives of trans women being murdered. The answer to trans women being murdered, Bernie, isn't Medicare for all. I'm with you on Medicare for all. I am. Like, let's get that shit. But at the same time, you know, don't give the same answer to especially to a question like that.
Right. Right. So, you know, the interesting thing to me was I felt like I think it was him and Warren who were asked that question. And I feel like neither of them really hit the mark. And the funny thing is, I feel like actually Sanders was closer in terms of the issue, but he didn't speak to it though. Like,
and Warren's was empty too. Like, I don't need you to go in a rose garden to read the names. Right. I need you to do something to stop it. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, that's exactly the point. If you're president and you're having to go to the rose garden and read off the list of names of every transgender person who died in the past year, then it means you failed. You failed to stop them from dying. Like. It's like, come on, like, now.
She's planning, like, we're estimating about 20 deaths next year, so we're going to get 20 roses for the ceremony next year. No, stop them from dying.
Right, but, the unfortunate thing is that she's probably going to get more play for it because people are going to view it as her speaking directly to the issue more. But the truth of the matter is, though...
Good point. That's an excellent point.
And the truth of the matter is, though, that Sanders hit the mark better, but he didn't explain it better. Medicare for All actually sort of is going to be a huge help in the lives of transgender women, and actually will probably stop a lot of transgender women from dying. Maybe not from being murdered, but certainly from dying for other reasons.
Yes.
Because they'll be able to get treatment. They'll be able to get treatment to help them deal with their gender dysmorphia or their whatever other issues, you know, depression from dealing with society's constant shitting on them. Like, it's like...
So if the question and it could be just I'm not remembering the question right, but if the question was about deaths, then I agree with you. You're absolutely right. I heard it transferred to me as murders, right. You know. And
the thing is, though, I don't know what the good answer to that is, because I mean there really is no good answer. How do you stop that? And I mean, my only answer would be to support them full blown, and that's how, you know, that's where supporting their transitioning in, and you know.
So then maybe Warren's answer wasn't the worst, because how do you address the maybe it's the bigotry, the underlying bigotry, and maybe we're not qualified to answer that. So
right. It's one of those issues where it's sort of like, you know, like how do you stop racism? I mean, you do things to put everybody on a more level playing field. You make sure the criminal justice system is not, coming down harder on black men and black women and Latinos and Latinas and people of color. But at the end of the day, the real issue is that, you know, society is racist.
And I do want to just say, for the audience, we're thinking these things out loud.
Right.
Right. Like, because my first instinct was then that Warren didn't answer the question good. But as we think about this out loud, if it is a humanity issue, right? If it's an issue of treating somebody and viewing them through the lens of humanity, then maybe I have to take back what I said. Maybe that presentation in the Rose Garden emphasizing the value of their lives would be a contribution. Now, don't get me wrong, Republicans will find a way, conservatives will find a way to make that even worse. But for somebody, they'll tap in and they'll see that humanity. So I'm sorry, I'm just saying, like, thinking out loud, I actually might want to change my opinion on what Warren said, because if it's a humanity issue, then the more we humanize every marginalized community, then the better chance they have of survival.
Right. Like, my criticism of Warren for that issue is that, you know, there's so many more ways you could do that. Like, I know there's a whole movement that when this happens, say their name. And that's probably where she was taking it from. But sort of the point is that when you're president of the United States,
you could do more.
You could do more. And yes, saying their name is certainly part of it. But I would say, you know, saying their name in terms of just every day, talking every day. Like, my criticism isn't her just saying their name in the Rose Garden. It's the fact that at the end of the year, she goes into the Rose Garden and says their name.
It does strike me as strange.
Yeah, it's just, you know, and again, her heart seems to be in the right place. This isn't like, you know, some Republican or some centrist Democrat, saying something, but it just, you know, and, you know, as president of the United States, you have the bully pulpit, and yeah. you can basically use that to hold up these transgender people who are fighting the fight every day. You know, you can do this and help them so they, to the ones who are living while they're alive, to stop this, these deaths from occurring. And I understand it's a great thing to also, you know, say that we're not going to forget the people who died in the past year. You know, I get where she was coming at, but I think it, overall it just came off sort of odd as the first thing she would mention.
I'm just, I'm going to ask my audience tomorrow, and I want to know what, like, some of the, I want to know how that was interpreted by members of the trans community. You know what I mean? I have my take and I'm thinking about it, but I mean, it could have came off. It might've hit the right notes for some people. I don't know.
Right.
Maybe they felt the same way we did. Maybe they felt like it was just platitudes.
Right.
So we'll see.
You know, I don't even think it was just platitudes. I think it was something that came from Warren's heart that I sort of feel like, you know, again, Sanders didn't answer the question with Medicare for All, but my overall feeling is that, you know, Medicare for All will save transgender lives without
absolutely.
A doubt.
Absolutely.
Will changing the discussion around trans people help save lives? Absolutely as well. Will that specific scenario Warren mentioned do anything? Probably less than both of those things we mentioned.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's move on to who I think does not belong on that stage for sure after tonight of those seven people. And that is Tom Steyer. Time to get the fuck off the stage, brother. I mean, just a pointless, like, everything, you know, the most funniest thing to me was the dude went up there and tried to pretend that he invented impeachment. mean, he was like, I was the first person to call for Donald Trump to be impeached 2 years ago. It's like, whoa, whoop-de-doo.
You know, what's weird though. I agree. Like, if we're cutting down the stage, he's the first to go. I think Yang and Klobuchar are close second and third. But Steyer is, who's supporting this guy? I know financially he's supporting himself, right? But at the same time, like, where is he getting the points that he's getting in the polling? Like, I like what he says. I like his emphasis on the environment. And I like his language on corporate greed. The problem is he also slides in this language of, I can outdo Trump on the economy. Which one is it? Because what are you going to say? Like, he has never specified what he's going to do on the economy. And he just says, I can beat Trump on the economy. Well, if you're coming with the same neoliberal economic policies that got us here in the first place, then what you're saying about corporate greed doesn't mean shit. You know what I mean? So he's got a little game that he's playing there, even though he tries to come off as really honest. I'm not buying it.
Right. You know, he's going to go on stage and he's gonna try something completely different, Ben. He's going to go on stage and he's going to say, I'm a real billionaire and Donald Trump is the fake billionaire. Something that's never been done before. Certainly wasn't an attack that was tried over and over again in 2016 and failed miserably. Because, I mean, that's sort of like, I don't know how else to interpret that. He's in a, like, he knows how to go after Trump because he's a businessman. What are you going to, I don't, like, what are you, the only argument to, I could possibly comprehend is that you would argue that you're a better businessman. And that's not going to play with the crowd that people are worried are going to go for Trump again, who usually don't go Republican, or more importantly, the people who are going to go, screw this, I don't like either of these guys, I'm staying home.
Yeah, man. Yeah. No, that's a guarantee. Like, Tom Steyer would be the most, I think he would be the most he would cause the most disenfranchisement, period. Like, people would self-disenfranchise in a minute. They would refuse to participate because of Steyer. Donald Trump would certainly win. Amy Klobuchar, I think she's just, her comedy, oh my God, her jokes. I want to shoot myself in the face every time she tells one of her jokes, but she just can't get enough of telling those damn jokes. But she needs to get off that stage. Andrew Yang, like, he's novel, right? He's novel in his approach. He's novel in that he doesn't wear a tie. You know, he's novel in that he's like, he sprays whipped cream in the mouths of interns and shit like that. But at the end of the day, it's like he's a distraction that's pulling away from there's a certain percentage of his base that would support Bernie Sanders. And so that's why I think he needs to go. And my mind is escaping me. Like, I mean, obviously the biggest ones that I feel don't need to be there, but they're going to be there for a while, Joe Biden and Pete Buttigieg. But I'm absolutely with you. Like, at the next debate, if Steyer's on that stage, there is no justice in the universe.
Right, right. And, you know, the unfortunate thing is I saw a poll that shows Steyer moving on up, actually, and, like, he's got, like, 10% now. It's
like, who's supporting this dude?
Right. I don't know who. You know why? This guy's spending so much money on online advertising and TV ads. His whole shtick is basically selling anti-Trump merch that barely even says his name on it. I think there's a percentage of people out there who just are bombarded with his shit, and they must just see his shit, and they go, oh, this guy must really be the guy out there who's the most anti-Trump, because I'm not seeing this from anybody else. And, you know, they're just they're not in the political bubble, so they go, I like Steyer, but they're not really, you know, if any candidate has, like, the least base that is strong with their candidate, it's him, obviously.
It's Steyer, yeah, for sure.
But with I thought Yang had a really strong night tonight, at least in delivery, in overall confidence and charisma. He was personable. He surprised me, because the guy honestly has not been a good debater. He has not come across good on the stage. I think he has some. I think he means well. I don't think, you know, some people think he's sort of like libertarian plant. I actually think the guy means well. I think he's extremely wrongheaded. I think he doesn't get politics in terms of, at least, how the modern discourse is. He just doesn't get it. The whole thing of not right, not left, not it's forward or whatever he says. It's like, dude, you just don't see what's going on here. Just wrongheaded as Biden going out there saying he's going to become friends with all the Republicans once Trump's out of office.
Man.
It's you know, and he tried to walk back that today, and it just still didn't hit the mark. You know, still.
But he had a great, like, if there's ever a line that I heard Joe Biden shine on, was the fact he was like, listen, if anybody up here has a right to hate the Republicans or Donald Trump, it's me. Because look how he's going after me. Look how he's going after my son, blah, 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 blah. And then he said, but I don't. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. Now, it was a great line. I don't know who the hell he's talking to, because Republicans are going to still hate him anyway. And I know that's like 100% what you were saying. But I just thought that showed he had a little bit of spark left to do just a little jujitsu. But that was it. So I just wanted to give him credit for one moment that was shining for me in terms of Joe Biden. You know, he had one spark.
You know, I felt the same way as you, and I was going to bring that up too, how it was a really strong moment for him, until you just said what you said, and now my mind is completely changed. He said that in defense of him saying he's going to somehow be some grand president, the grand negotiator who crosses the aisle, and he'll help the Republicans come back to the middle. And
it sounded good, right?
It sounds, you know, but the idea that, but then he used, you know, he, to back himself up for some reason, he said how there's no one on stage Republicans have been hating on more. It's like, it doesn't make any sense now, actually.
But what's crazy, though, check this out. Here's what's crazy, and this is why this game is so ridiculous. You know that. I know that. But that shit almost worked on us. Like, for a split second. For a split second, I was like, yeah, and I was like, no. Right. So that spin is powerful, man.
It's like, he's right. There is no one the Republican Party has been attacking more out of everyone on that stage. And that's why Joe Biden's right when he says that Republicans are going to work with him? What?
That's literally what just happened. And I brought it up, like, the same thing happened to you that happened to me. Like, I brought it up, like, this is a good moment, but wait a minute, who the hell is he talking to? He's talking to the people. Like, and this is what I don't get about, this is the most frustrating thing about Democrats, right? Republicans have proven that they will destroy their own ideas. They will betray their own ideology. They will burn this country to the ground just to beat the Democrats. At all costs.
Right.
How do you still think that you could be nice and be reasonable with unreasonable people? I don't get it.
Obama wanted to cut Social Security so he could strike the grand bargain with them and come across as some sort. He wanted his legacy to be that he worked for Republicans. And they basically said, no, we're not doing that, even though we want to do that.
There's nothing they won't betray in order to just win the opposition. And so if you know that, then here's what pissed me off about PBS. One, it was a better better debate. We talked about the climate change. Great. They had good follow-up questions. But their framing gave too much credence to the Republican Party as rational, reasonable actors. And when you do that, what you're doing is you're setting the entire country up for failure, because you're dealing with one group that is intransigent at all costs. They will burn this country to the ground. And that's not being, they're talking about a civil war. Like they're joking about a third term. Donald Trump literally violates the Constitution anytime he gets an opportunity to. And you're going to validate that by posing right wing framed questions to the Democrats and by insisting that the Democrats not be bold. What are you going to capitulate on? Are you willing to back up? Are you going to be easy with Medicare for all, or are you just going to go hard? Like, that's the framing. And so you're already setting them up to move further to the right instead of saying, well, really just blowing the whole framework out of the ballpark. And allowing them to be bold. They didn't want anybody to be bold. They wanted all the Democrats to be tepid. And that's how we got to where we are now.
Right, exactly. It's a great sort of point to and let's get into this actually, because right before we went live, we had a really quick discussion about the debate off the air. And you brought up how, you think that there's a after tonight, you don't think anyone really made the case as the stronger candidate, which I completely agree with you. And I'd like you to get into that a little bit now that we're on the air, because I think it's a great point that shows that these debates are not really doing their job. All these debates sort of do is they
wear people down.
Yeah, and it almost is like the origin story of a superhero movie over and over again. It's like they're always feigning shock at, like, Bernie wants to make sure that everyone has health care and there's no private insurance. Yeah, we're how many months into this, and I get that there's people who are just jumping into it now, but the new Spider-Man movie didn't start at Uncle Ben dying, because right. people will know about that regardless of whether they've seen all the other Spider-Man movies. We're at the point now where it's time to really get into it. It's time to really start talking about these issues in ways that haven't been talked about yet. It's time that people. You're good on my end. Are you all
I'm
right?
Here. All I'm right, here. Cool. Okay. Yeah.
It's,
I'm back.
It's time that they ask a question to Bernie, and then they ask a question to Warren, and they force the two of them to sort of stake why they're different, because no one's done that on a debate stage.
Right.
You and I know why they're different. Bernie and Warren know why they're different. I appreciate their they're sort of truce, because I do think the two of them are the best we've got, even though I think Bernie is better. But Warren, and Bernie need to finally put out there for the majority of people who aren't in this bubble like you and me why they're different. We need candidates to bring up that Buttigieg's plan for free college views the very wealthy as a family household making more than $100,000, which is complete bullshit, because if you have two parents making 50K and they have four kids, they can't afford to send their kids to college. They're not rich. That's just ridiculous. Like, it's like, come on. It's like, and they're not doing this. And I do actually think the moderators brought up a little bit of more details about the Buttigieg college thing, but there's no one went for it. It's like, what's going on here? They're just like repeating the same things at this point. It's time to like change things up. Let's get things moving. Let's get into this primary season mode, and let's show everyone why you guys are different, so we could see who the true strongest candidate is to face Trump.
Yeah, no, I think that's actually a really great observation that we all just keep showing up for, though. We all just keep turning that goddamn TV on, man, and we watch it, and we see the same thing happen over and over again, and we all send the same variation of the same tweets that we send every time. Like, I don't know why we are like that, but I think that's a human nature problem, to be honest with you, because we keep going right back to the same trough of bullshit that they feed us, and we don't get any closer. I will say that this debate was the best of the debates, only
Well, you broke up again, but it's all right. Let's see what happens here. You'll come back any minute. All right, we're live again. Like I was saying, you know, must be something going on with YouTube because I'm having no internet troubles on my end. But let's get right back into it. You said that your biggest problem with this debate was, and just take it from there, and then we'll get into it.
Yeah. Oh, man, you didn't get any of that.
Yeah.
No, I would say the best thing about the debate, the best thing about the debate was that it was there were one or two more questions that we didn't get in the first eight. I don't even know what number we're on, like six or whatever. And we keep coming back to the same show. And I think it's a product of politics in general. I mean, think about it. Like, how many times have you said the same thing on your show? Not because you don't have anything new that you could say. It's just we keep going over the same shit over and over and over again. We're still trying to figure out some basic things. And that's reflective in these debates. That's what's frustrating about it.
Right. No, absolutely. It's a great point. You know, you brought up that we keep going back to the trough, and it's like almost like, you know, it's like we're a bunch of little piglets hoping that tomorrow there's going to be steak, even though every day we just get the slop, you know?
Same. It's like every day we get the slop, for sure. For sure.
So let's sort of, I guess, it's after midnight here on the East Coast, and let's sort of close this out with just, I guess, the takeaway for what we want to see going forward. This was the last debate of 2019. The next debate is going to be the one right before. I think it's going to be either the one right before Iowa or the one right before the one right before Iowa.
Okay.
But we're going to be ramping it up. We're going to two debates a month when 2019 starts. Again, I hope they...
I'm sorry. Two a month?
Yeah. January's got two and February's got two. Yeah, no, yeah. I completely get you. That's why I'm hoping that we'll at least change it up, because if it's just going to be, if what they got planned for us next month is Sam Raimi Spider-Man followed by the Andrew Garfield Amazing Spider-Man, and we're exactly. seeing and we're seeing Uncle Ben die twice, then I mean, it's going to be pointless. Give us something different. Go at it a different way. And you know. Let me, because you're my guest, let me start it so you get the last word. Here's what I think's going to happen. I think we need to get Tulsi Gabbard and Andrew Yang. They're probably going to go to Iowa because they want to get votes. They want to see how they can withstand an election. But because it's a caucus, they're not going to hit 15%. And their supporters are going to be forced to support someone else. And that's where you're going to see the true power of where Bernie Sanders is going to lie, because... Again, we got two people who are hovering around 3 to 5%, not too much on their own, but when you put that together, that's 6 to 10%, and when you put that on top of someone who's just 3 to 4 points between him and Biden, you got a winner right there with that with that 6 to 10%.
For sure.
That's when hopefully Andrew Yang and Tulsi will drop out, because when we get to New Hampshire, their votes, no matter how few there are, will count. It won't, even if they get under 15%, they won't get any delegates, but those voters won't be told to go somewhere else. They'll have cast their vote and that's it. Those votes just basically get tossed in the trash if their candidates don't get that 15% threshold. So I want that to happen. Tulsi and Andrew Yang, who have the most supporters who would go to Sanders, need to get out. I think Warren should stay in for a little bit. Let's see where, because I also don't think it's a slam dunk with all of our supporters going to Bernie. I also think it's a good idea to have someone who's a good second choice still in it. We're seeing Bernie rise with Warren still in the race, so I don't think that's a problem. So let's see how that pans out. I think Bernie needs to continue doing what he does. And sorry about that. Doing his grassroots, basically building for the caucus and such.
Yeah.
I know he's got a really good ground game in Iowa right now. I believe in New Hampshire as well. Biden's just got to keep being Biden
that's all he's got to do.
Right. But he's not dropping though. That to me is where the weirdness of this all is. He's got a steady support base. So I don't quite know what's going on there. What we're seeing the divide shrink because Bernie is growing in support. Biden's not really losing any. So, yeah, I just hope the next debates have something else going on with them. Because it's going to be pointless to do two more of these a month if it's just the same old shit.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know that I can watch two a month if it's going to be the same thing. I agree with everything that you said. Yang and Tulsi, they should go, but they will be in Iowa. Tulsi looks like she's going to stay until New Hampshire. She's investing a lot in New Hampshire. And I think she's like 5 or 6 points, between 5 or 6, depending on the poll. So I don't think she's going to get out before New Hampshire. And unfortunately, that's the exact state where she could do the most damage to Bernie Sanders, simply because of the margin of error, the margin difference between he and Buttigieg in New Hampshire. I think it's Buttigieg and not Biden, but it's late. In terms of, yeah, so anything I say wrong at this point is because it's well past my bedtime. The other things that I would like to see change is the same thing I've been saying since 2015, man. I cannot afford personally to see Sanders slip up on questions about the black vote because of how important the black vote is to every single nominee. I mean, every single time the Democrats go to the polls every 4 years, they need black people to show up at about 60 to 65% turnout rate, and 90% of that voting for the Democratic Party, maybe 85%. Anything less than that, Democrats lose. And so it's impossible for any candidate to win without locking up the black vote. Here's where Biden support exists. In older black, you know, boomers who are fond of Barack Obama and they just know Biden's name and they feel like he has the best chance of beating Donald Trump.
Right. You did see that poll though, that last poll out of South Carolina, which shocked me, where Bernie is
right.
Bernie's
made it. He's actually and here's why. I'm glad you brought that up, because he's doing this time what he didn't do in 2016. Right. He is finally putting the resources in South Carolina that he needs to put there to get those numbers where they need to be. I just need him to keep doing that and double down, like push. You got to go all in. I need to see this is not a Bernie problem. This is kind of like a YouTube commentator space problem about identity politics. It's like, to me, it's like, yes, identity politics can be weaponized, but you have people have their identities that they face real issues around, right? So we can't dismiss their issues. And then there's the politics side. So you have the identity, politics, the political side. You need these votes. So if you got to talk to them in their language about what's going on in their community, what's happening in the trans community, what's happening in the LGBT community, in the black community, the Hispanic community, go get those goddamn votes. So I would hope that, no, I don't hope. I see that Sanders is doing that differently this time. He's definitely put his money where his mouth is. And so I feel like he's going to do much better in that regard. We need him to, because that's going to be the difference between shaking up Biden support, particularly as he goes through the South. In terms of actually watching these debates, I just honestly don't know that I'm going to watch them all, to be honest with you. So, right. You know, maybe they'll pare them down a little bit more. And then we'll get more substantive debates. But here's the thing. The more substantive debates that we have, the less frequency we need. Like, you know, unless they're going to like itemize them and say, this debate coming up is about foreign policy, this debate is coming up is about domestic economic policy, then unless they do that, then it's going to be very redundant. If they do that, then we have a great opportunity to actually get some substance.
Absolutely. Benjamin Dixon of the Benjamin Dixon Show. Where can people find you?
On Twitter, at Benjamin P. Dixon is the best place. Our YouTube, I forgot my name. Something Benjamin Dixon is the show name.
You know, if you're listening to this show, you probably know where Ben is on YouTube, because his show is it definitely dwarfs mine in terms of...
and my show is small, so...
Ooh.
Hey, man,
ooh.
Okay. Oh no! That was a shame. No. I'm saying my show is all relative. That's what
right,
I'm saying.
Absolutely,
it's all relative. But I got to get you on my show, man. So
I'd love to.
Let's connect, and I'm gonna get you on. Appreciate
let's
you.
Let's do having. It. I you know, thanks for staying up with me tonight, and have a good night.
All right, take care.
Take care. All right, people. It is late. So I will. What I will do is we're going to end the show now. First, I'm going to give a shout out to the patrons. Patreon.com/Matt Binder. I'm going to give them a shout. And then all you patrons, I will have a Patreon-only show for you in the coming days before the end of the year, where the last 2 weeks, there's going to be another show, another two shows probably. And one of those shows will be the Patreon-only show. And we'll do like a cool, you know, we'll do a rundown of the year. We'll discuss what our hopes for 2020 are. We'll take questions, comments, and calls like that. But right now, I'm not going to go to the member, do the patron show, because it's we're pushing 12:30 here on the East Coast, past midnight here. So let's do that. So first, though, these are the wonderful people who are supporters at patreon.com/Matt Binder who make this show possible. And they are Abigail T, Adam Q, Alan B, Andrew C, Andrew H, Angela, Ari R, Ben, Benji, Bobby M, Brosnan, BZ, Champagne Kame, Chi, Christine H, Colin R, Connor R, Cyber Snowstorm, Dan K, Dan M, Dank Uger, Dave K, David Z, Dragon Slayer, Eugene B, Froz K, FTW All Day, Future MD, George A, Greg D, Grim L, Ian Curtis J, Jack D, Jameson Test, Janelle A, Jasmine H, Jeff K, Jeremy M, John B, John S, Jonathan B, Jonathan L, Joseph R, Joyce M, Justin S, Katie S, Katz, Kaushal, La Putin Machine, Lisa D, Lisa H, Mark S, Matt Z, Max W, User Me, Melissa M, Mitch V, Michael B, Michael J, Michael M, Mr. Danks, Nicole A, Namde Net, Null Style, Odeath, Qster, Ryan, Left Is Best, Scott R, Sean H, Stephen R, Stephen S, Struggle Session, TM, Tamney G, Taylor M, Terrence R, Thaddeus A, This Is Not Pizza, Tina M, Todd K, Tom G, Tom M, Why That Thai Guy, Will P, Utopian, Zachary P, Zarin, and Zoe G. You could also support this show by subscribing to iTunes and Google Play. Spread the word, tell people about the show. That's always the biggest help. Tell your friends, name drop the show in your YouTube streams that you watch. Tell your favorite YouTube host that you'd like to see me on their show, if you'd like that. And tell them that you'd like to see them on my show, if you'd like that. Also, leave a review at iTunes. Really simple to do. A star review, a written review. Follow me on Twitter, Matt Binder. What else? I feel like I'm forgetting something. Oh, subscribe on YouTube. YouTube.com/Matt Binder. Let's grow this YouTube channel. Let's do it. Patreon.com/Matt Binder. And a name drop that one more time. To the live stream listeners, thank you for dealing for sticking around with the live stream issues. I don't think it was an internet problem on either my end or Ben's end, because just our streams went down. I had no issue with the internet connection for the web and anything like that. I was looking at things and refreshing things, and I was still talking to Ben on Skype, actually, when the YouTube channel was cut off. So it was probably something with that, because otherwise I would have lost him on Skype as well. All right, folks. Again, we'll have more shows before the end of the year as we close out 2019, and we'll have an exclusive patron-only show. Other than that, see you all next time. On Doomed.